There's a great and a bloody fight round this whole world tonight. In the battle, the bombs and shrapnel rain. Hitler told the world around he would tear our Union down. But our Union's gonna break them slavery chains. And our Union's gonna break them slavery chains.
I walked up. Hello, and welcome back to our podcast. The fanfic of the fan
in itself is synthesis between Fallout, a post-apocalyptic video game. I did that the wrong way, but whatever. And My Little Pony, a popular show about pastel horses. Hi, I'm Fi. I'm joined once again with my co-host, Weird. Say hello, Weird.
This is a mischievous Weird Ington Esquire who tripped Fi up there before the recording by alerting him to something at the very last second. My deviousness knows no bounds. I have conspired to ruin the podcast.
Oh, man. As if you could ruin the podcast any more than Somber does.
You see, that was sort of the joke I was planning to lean around to, but I couldn't find a hook on which to sort of balance the quip. So anyway, what happened?
Sorry, what? Hello?
Fi, yes?
Yeah, sorry.
What happened last week?
I don't know. You tell me.
Did anything happen? Okay, so we finally had our... Wow. Oh, God!
I honestly didn't remember. And the act of... The act of accessing my long-term memory to find out was physically painful. It was like a punch to the gut. It all flooded back at once. The last chapter was solely a conversation between Blackjack and Golden Blood, and so it was entirely a conversation between Somber's like abuse sponge that he can't decide whether or not like it's Little Pip, and so he's trying to punish her. Or it's himself, and he's trying to, like, flatter or punish himself. Talking with his overt, like, couldn't be more nakedly obvious, direct self-insert. A former teacher, much like Somber, and who happens to share what really seems to be all of Somber's, like, political and philosophical beliefs, who is also, like, has... up to a certain point been framed as the villain so he could express a profoundly sickening belief Somber has while being able to get away with it under the cover of, well, look, it's, you know, he's the bad guy. But nobody seems to have an argument against his case. I mean, like, maybe, you know, sometimes the truth is rough. except... now that he's started planning for this, like, meeting, he's, in previous chapters, we have gotten some excuses that, no, in fact, everything bad he ever did was a result of subtle mind control by the devil. And so now,
devil.
And so now his, what he has, like, stated on the record in forums and stuff as an intentional Jesus allegory, the last chapter was nothing but a intentional Jesus allegory forgiving his avatar directly and personally. And it was pretty gross and kind of frightening. It was pretty mind-blowing. Watching a man just patiently, directly, paragraph after paragraph, describe his own masturbation session.
Yeah, with like a pair of sock puppets on. It was really grotesque. Just taking turns and everything.
And that's fucking it. That was the entirety of the last chapter. If anything else happened, I don't recall it.
Neither do I, frankly.
All that stands out in my mind is a very long, intimately described masturbation session.
Just nothing but rehabilitation of the core villain of the story, or what was presumed to be the core villain of the story. Like, it's one of those things where, like, every arrow would point you to the idea that he's the villain, but, like, I've known for, like, you know, a long time, obviously, that he was never the villain. He was always meant to be this, like, ridiculous, just, I don't know, superfluous character. Like, Golden Blood is so irrelevant, despite being, like, it's funny that he's the most important character in this story, but he's so, like, comically uninteresting. He just feels like he's nothing.
I think we commented on it last week. It is remarkable for, like, just the author to, like nakedly be in the story. Like he's important in that he is the author. Like, there's this, like, yeah, there's this psychedelic meta lens of the whole story now that, like, the author has appeared in it.
Yes.
I think the thing that surprised me most about me, like, I'm offended and disgusted by myself. Like, I'm now staring in a mirror, protagonist of, Adam, I'm Adam Jensen-ing it up. I'm staring into a mirror, a cracked mirror that I just punched. Because I, for whatever reason, really thought that Sombra would have the self-restraint to keep Golden Blood a memory. a being that once was, and who we only know through their legacy. But of course not. What?
It only just hit me now too that, like, because he was at the Littlehorn Massacre and he got infected with Pink Cloud. It also makes him the oldest pre-war ghoul to have ever lived as well, which is very, like, very silly of a thing to just sort of tack onto your character. It's very grade school kind of shit. But I guess we should jump into this chapter, which is fucking mercifully less, like, there's less in it than the previous one. Like, there's less words, at least. Aw, this one's so scrambled, though, because my brain fried on this one, though. I'm probably gonna miss some shit, just letting you folks know. Chapter 68. So, I entitled the subtitle this one, What the Fuck Even Is This Chapter?
Is it morning as in the sun is rising, or morning as in grief?
Morning as in the sun is rising. So, this chapter starts with Golden Blood, like, rambling even more about bullshit.
Jesus Christ!
Like, I don't even really remember exactly the shit that he's talking about, except for the just, like, more detailing of how, like, he was tricked into putting a soul spirit inside the moon so that the Eater of Souls could eat it and gain a bunch of power or something, and that would be what would end the world. And it means that, like, nobody's evil plan will work because nobody besides Golden Blood knows that there's a spirit inside the moon. So, like, everybody else's dumb villain plan was always poised to fail. Making you know that chapter where Cognitive showed up and she did all that shit and all that preening? None of that matters. Not a single fucking thing.
It's even more end of Metal Gear Solid 2 than I could have anticipated. But fortunately, now we've heard from the author, the most powerful, smartest, and important character in the show. So we can be assured that there are no more, that no one has a more inside scoop on what is really happening.
We get a little bit of his dumb backstory when he was a little child, where he was apparently like taken on expeditions by his mother all the time because they're hiding from his abusive father, which is shit does not matter, but it's very, very comical to me to know the history of, like, British colonialism and how much this just reeks of darkest Africa type novelizations. Like, it's a very Alan Quartermain kind of pulp thing happening here with his backstory, which is if this book wasn't made of red flags, this would just be another one. It doesn't matter. His backstory doesn't matter. All we get, like, all the only thing that matters that was kind of funny to me is that his mother's dying words were like a fever of her, like, screaming out that her child is evil and that he's gonna serve the Eater of Souls one day, which really would just fuck you up as a kid. Like your mom raving with her dying words that, like, son, you're gonna believe in Satan when you're a kid and kill the world. Which is really funny to me. But fuck God. So there's this whole fucking exchange where it's like, okay, well now we need to get out of the brain box, and the thing's like, oh well, we can't let you out. You have to kill Goldenblood. And BJ's like, well, I'm not an executioner. And this is where, like, things get really hairy again in terms of a lot of the storytelling. So, like, Blackjack insists she's not an executioner. And an executioner is defined by Blackjack in the story as a person who kills somebody in cold blood, even if it was for the right reasons. The story then proceeds to, like, bring up the receipt of all of the things Blackjack's done again. To showcase off that, like, what do you mean you're not an executioner? Look at all these babies you killed. Look at all these people that you've murdered. And, like, this scene is so bizarre because it's essentially, like, incredibly valid criticisms of Blackjack's character being, like, rebutted by Blackjack just essentially going, that didn't count, and that being, like, acceptable. Like, there's a part in it where, like, it's you know, does the laundry list of all the child she's murdered, all the people she's harmed, the people she's raped, like, all the bad things that she's ever done, and, like, her response to that is basically, like, but, like, I didn't turn into an ex, like, I didn't become more of a killer over, like, it's very odd. Gosh. She basically, like, she paints herself as, like, well, I could have been worse. I could have gone full on Reaper, but I didn't. And that's supposed to be conviction, is the way that that's framed.
I'm reminded of one of the only people who is, like, put on, like, show trial for anything that ever happened under the British reign in India. A guy came back from the East Indies and, like, hey, we've heard that you've done some, like, blatantly, wildly corrupt stuff. What say you? What else was I supposed to do? Do you have any conception of the opportunities for graft that were available to me?
Jesus.
You should have seen all the things that I didn't do.
You should reward me for all the murder. It's very alarming that basically sole rebuttal that Blackjack presents is that it didn't change me killing all those people. I'm still the same Blackjack. She's effectively arguing that she's had no character growth and that's a good thing.
It is a more direct than ever admission of a Protestant. You don't know what's in my heart.
Yeah.
It's just, you don't know what it's like. There's a version of this speech that's the total inverse that would have worked, which would be like, all I can do is try to be better than I was yesterday.
It's at least the theme it barks out at the beginning.
But now it's just like, no, I am an essentially good person. Foundationally, I, Blackjack, am a good person no matter what my outward actions are.
Yeah, which is just false. Like, it's also provably false. Like, there's a myriad of times where Blackjack just kills people kind of just because they're there. Like, there's a bit in it where she, like, violently murders somebody because she just sees red and she just murders a guy. Like, she doesn't even, like, so even her, like, claims about, like, that she only kills people, like, because she's put into awkward positions where she has to kill them, like, that isn't even true. Like, she's in total, like, there's a bunch of situations where she's in utter control of the situation and she still just murders a guy anyways. It's really reminiscent of, like, a thing I remember reading of, like, I don't want to talk about this too much, but, like, someone breaking down, like, Ender's Game and how, like, Ender's Game, maybe we've talked about this on the podcast before, but, like, Ender's Game is really good about, like, making the main character do a bunch of fucked up shit, but doing everything in its power to say that, like, there's context for why they're doing it, which therefore, like, invalidate, like, it basically just, like, it more or less just, like, forgives them for doing it. And, like, that's a very common, like, sort of, like, rhetoric that's around, like, genociders of, like, well, they had no choice. They were all coming for me, so I had to kill them all. And that's kind of like foundationally a lot of what the story really is to me, is like Blackjack pretends to be a good person, but isn't. Like, she's provably not. But the story agrees with her because the author agrees on the idea that Blackjack is, like, immutable and incorruptible despite being so. Like, she's obviously corrupted. She's not even, like... Like, I guess I can agree with one thing, that she didn't have any character growth from being exposed to the waste and killing people because she was already doing that stuff. Like, a friend of the podcast brought up the fact that, like, the very first thing we ever see Blackjack do is she's about to kill 21. She is definitionally about to execute him. And not for a reason. He didn't commit a crime. It's just because the population is too high and he needs to be expunged from it. So she is killing someone literally because it's her orders to do so. So she has never changed as a character, because the grim irony of the story is that this main character constantly says she's not an executioner, which she's been one from the beginning. Like, but the story doesn't agree with that. Like, the story doesn't take that reading.
So before we move on, I think I kind of want to point out that, like, the thing that the first time you said I'm not an said the classic catchphrase, that thing you want on a t-shirt, I'm not an executioner, we're never given a window into, like, Somber might actually have some sort of condition that makes human emotions difficult for him.
That's making a lot of
assumptions. Well, I say this because, like, you have all these opportunities, like, he keeps coming back to this I'm not an executioner thing. Does Blackjack ever try to, like, make a case for why that matters? Like, because it really does strike me as, like, this completely empty, this hollow moral stance. Like, it could literally be anything. Like, she takes this stance and insists with all of her might that it's the case and that it's a line she won't cross. But her reasoning seems as arbitrary as it could just, like, she could just as easily have the firm moral sense she won't wear a hat on a Tuesday. I'm not an executioner. And I don't wear socks with sandals.
So I think the reason why this particular thing is so present is because I think that the intended theme is supposed to be that all this bad stuff happens to Blackjack, but she remains unchanged by it, and she won't cross that final line of killing people just for the sake of killing people. But the problem is that she's obviously crossed that line. That's provably true. It's not even a debate about that. So that moral doesn't mean anything to us as a reader. But also, like, it's hard not to read it as an excuse for why she kills people so seemingly indiscriminately. Like, why does she terminate all those foals? Why does she mercy kill a bunch of people? Why does she see red and murder a bunch of people? Like, why do people keep dying around her, despite her, like, her protest that she's doing it for a reason or she's doing the right thing? And I think the argument is just meant to be, like, she should be justified in doing it because she believes that she's doing the right thing. And that's all that seemingly matters, even when it's obviously not the case in a bunch of times. Like, the story's so weird. Like, it's so, like, there's a bunch of instances where the story is, like, self-critical, but it doesn't, like, it doesn't take any of that self-critique as, like, valid. It always takes it in the worst possible faith. It just goes, like, because it just reads like
it's not self-threat, it's self-abuse.
Well, it doesn't even feel like self-abuse. It feels like the author directly responding to criticism about the story, like, within the text.
Yeah. We've come across that dozens of times. Stuff that, like, hey, that's a reasonable point. You're just not addressing it, huh?
Yeah. Or here's why it's wrong. It feels like a YouTube reaction video. Like, shit, it's, like, so a lot of this just stuff that just, like, feels really hollow. Like, maybe there is an attempt at a theme going here with this I'm not an executioner shit, but it's hard not to read it from my perspective as, shut up, shut up. Shut up. Shut up. Let me write my story however I want to. Shut up. Like, you're not the boss of me. And that's how it reads to me. It just
I mean,
very hard to take seriously.
I'm usually very on board with that sort of creative stance, but only if it's a stance being taken by a creator who has something to say.
Yeah.
With their work.
And this firmly doesn't. The only thing that this story has ever had anything to say is that, like, I think Little Pip should have gotten raped, and, like, you did that. Congratulations, Somber. The story should be over now. Good job. You did it. So, anyways, let's just power through all this dumb shit. She ends up getting kicked out of the system because the, like, it turns out that, like, one of the Golden Bloods that she's arguing with turns out to not be the real Golden Blood, and it's the program, like, trying to trick her into killing him because he says a bunch of mean things to her. And then she figures it out. Basically by just saying how smart and handsome he is, like, it's just, Golden Blood's too smart for that.
Oh, my God.
And, so that, you know, she gets kicked out of the system, because she's like, okay, we need to get you out. And Golden Blood's like, no, you can't let me out. I need to die. And she's like, nah, too bad. She uses this line a lot about, like, it's not about you. There's broader circumstances happening, which, like, I would agree with. I would have agreed with this in the original story. But this story so painstakingly focuses on the idea that Golden Blood was at the head of every single fucking conspiracy. So no, it really is all about him, because you made yourself insert into the fucking story. Like, of course it's about him. Like, you plucked a god and put him into your fucking fan fiction and told us that he doesn't matter.
Look, it's not about Golden Blood, because that's what Somber's therapist keeps telling him.
You mean Blackjack?
No.
I
strongly suspect that, like, Somber knows that phrase and assigns some sort of vague importance that he doesn't fully understand to it, because he's had at least one therapist who's tried to, like, drag him out of a depressive spiral, of a catastrophizing spiral. By, like, trying to insist to him, it is not all about you. Other people factor into this.
But yeah, it's very stupid. So Blackjack gets kicked out of the system, and she figures out her way of getting out of this problem is basically, like, just the dumbest, most, like, if the story wasn't as corkscrewy and bullshit and bad as it is, it would be almost, it's almost impressive if it wasn't so cliched the way that they get out of this. It's very Gordian knot cutting of, like, well, you can't, like, you have to kill him. You can't leave this room until you kill him, and he can't, you don't want to kill him, and the system now recognizes that you can't kill him, so how do we proceed out of this? And Blackjack's basically like, I'm gonna kill him with kindness. She's like, I'm gonna drag him out into the waste, and he's gonna have to, like, basically be on community service and try to fix the wasteland, and then if he dies out there, then, like, your mission's done. And the robot, like, accepts this.
Also, isn't he an indestructible? What tool does she have available to her to accomplish this? I was given to understand that the cloud ghouls are extra S-tier indestructible.
So they can die. There's a couple of means that can do it, but I'm assuming that just the machine just has, like, a kilometron on it of some kind. It's relatively vague. It's apparently it lists it that it has, like, a list of kilometrons that could be used to exterminate him. That's what got her into this in the first place, is she had to pick his particular execution, because, you know, if you're gonna die, you might as well turn it into a ridiculous funhouse game. But yeah, like, if you vaporized him or, like cut him apart and stuff like that, it'll kill him. But, like, anyways, yeah, that's a cool dumb thing that happens. The scene is so fucking, like, it's not whiplash, it's just, like, it's one of those scenes that happens and you're just, like, I'm just dumbstruck by, like, we have a ticking clock and they're sitting in this super stables, like, bar, getting drunk, having conversations that more or less boil down to, both of the characters jacking each other off, telling about how cool they are, and what their plan to get out is. And it's just like, fuck, I'm sick of these kind of scenes. Like, there's it's like, no wonder there's still like a fucking 100,000 words left or whatever. It's because of dumb shit like this. Blackjack and GB get drunk and have the plan of, well, we need to escape. And it's like, well, the king won't let you because he's just a jerk. So the plan is like, okay, well, whatever. If he won't let us out, we'll challenge him to a duel because his pride is so high that he'll want to, like, fight you for it, basically. And that's the plan. I'm just going to fast forward to they fight, obviously, because the King Hades, which is the king of the Bat Ponies, is just a blowhard. And hate everything about this scene. So someone brought up the fact that like Blackjack seemingly like lost her mystical victory force. That means that she just wins every fight even when she shouldn't. So like you'd think in like a good story that would have like tremendous lasting consequences in the story, and that the idea of Blackjack pulling dumb Hail Mary moves like this would be shown that since she's lost her victory juice, she can't win anymore on bullshit, and she actually has to, like, try at things for the first time in the story. But she just, like, drunkenly clowns him like it's nothing, proving that, like, the whole losing her victory sauce moment is just utterly irrelevant, and I kind of just don't know why it's in the story at all. But she just drunkenly clowns him. That's all cool.
You didn't need your cutie mark, Blackjack. God's favor was in your heart all along.
Like, I will say from the, like, very, very specificity of, I like, even in my notes, I like when Blackjack is drunk. It's the only time I like Blackjack. It's something I've really, like, come to hone in on, is that, like, Blackjack's drunken superpower is very goofy to me, but I find it appealing that, like, because I've done it the way before, like, I like my favorite version of Blackjack that almost never happens in the story is, like, drunken redneck with a hammer, and all of her problems are nails. Like, that's what I like. Like, I like, it's just like, okay, how is a blitzed out horse gonna get into this problem? She's going to glass a guy and then shoot another guy in the dick with a gun. Like, that stuff is, like, peak Blackjack to me. It's the version I like the most of her. So this is a cool scene, in that specific sense. Like, her drunkenly breaking a guy, like, glass over a dude's face and then shooting all the shards of the glass into his eyes to blind him permanently is a fun scene. It's another one of those situations of, like, man, I wish I just had this more often. I wish this was the character more often. But she, in a moment of drunken frustration, she, like, because he still wants to fight even being blind, she, like, pulls off his magic helmet and beats him in the face with it until it breaks, like, the gem on it. And it turns out, like, the gem was the MacGuffin they needed to, like, off of Nightmare Castle and back into the real world. So now the Nightmare Castle has been shunted back into the real reality. So I guess that just solves their problem, but it puts, like, this entire town at risk to do so, you know, like when heroes do.
Hooray! You've imperiled thousands of lives, or hundreds at least.
She, like, wakes up in a cell and psycho-shies there, and, like, admittedly, like, actually calls her out on their shit, and it is depressing that, like, Psycho Shai is a character that in this moment I'm rooting for because he's the only, like, one of the very few characters to actually call Blackjack's bullshit out. And that, like, he's like, well, you... She, like, even says, like, every time you meet me, Blackjack, you make my life worse. Because, like, you trashed the house that I'm living in, you made everybody's lives more dangerous. Of course, raiders are just raiding, they're trying to raid the house now, we have to keep defending it from it because it's a big fuck-off castle on top of a big fuck-off mountain. You also my dad that I thought was dead forever, because remember, Psycho Shai is Golden Blood's daughter. I didn't know he was even alive, and now I have to deal with all that confusing bullshit. So, like, thanks for that. And, like, I don't know, I agree with her. Like, that's, like, it's a lot of bullshit to just kind of just be dropped in on you. And it's like, it's another one of those things where the scene can almost say something by saying that, like, Blackjack is a whirlwind of chaos. Like, and that's a good and bad thing, because, like, she doesn't like, necessarily make things better, and she a lot of times can just make things worse, and, like, that's an interesting character, because she's trying to do better, but, like, just her nature of her character just has lasting consequences, good or bad. But, like, even this scene is a cop-out, because Blackjack just goes, like, well, you know, usually when I come into towns, there's usually bad shit happening just under the surface, and I just kind of happen to drudge it up, which just kind of really puts a sore spot on the idea of that thing I just said seconds ago. That Blackjack actually has no lasting consequences on anything.
Could also say, good riddance. This was, you've been enjoying a rape factory, and I'm very happy for you, but that's over now.
But you know, the story.
It is, in fact, you who is the bad person. I make your life. I make your life worse at every turn because you're always doing the worst thing I could think of whenever I see you again.
Yeah, you're a bad.
That would be a hell of a relationship. Like it would be. This could vary in another world. This could be like the Joker turning to Batman. Every time I meet you, you're making my life worse.
Yeah, God.
It's because you're always doing something that needs to be stopped.
Man, I want to read that story. We're just gonna make a story out of all these ideas that we keep saying on the podcast. Of just versions of PH that we wish existed.
I mean, like, I have started and stopped. Like, I've made a couple drafts.
We just gotta commit to
but
it.
But actually, like, I am glad that, like, now I have a clearer version of what to do. Like, I was just gonna completely erase and forget Psycho Shy as a concept. But now I actually like the idea of, like, what if a Batman-Joker relationship in a post-apocalyptic, like...
But Joker was really petty about it.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
And not really obsessed with Batman. It's just that Batman keeps showing up and is like he's got some new grift going every time. It always falls apart because Batman happens to wander through.
But yeah, we also get we find out dun 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 that the Nightmare Castle was like the Shadow Plane equivalent of like Black Pony Mountain, that like weird non-Euclidean hexagonal mountain. Like, it just kind of says that, like, oh, it's like a traded place thing, but I thought it would be, like, I just assumed it was, like, a lot more of an interesting thing that, like, the reason why Black Pony Mountain is so fucking weird is because, like, it and the Nightmare Castle have, like, swapped, like, places. So, like, the, like, non-Euclidean geometry of the mountain is, like, Shadow Plane Mountain, but trapped in the real world, and that's why it's so, like, it behaves so weirdly, but it just kind of, like, I don't know. It's something I'm thinking about too much, much more than the actual story does. But yeah,
there's two things that could be really interesting. I agree that like either it would be interesting that it's fucked up because it is a mountain from another dimension, which is a pretty cool idea. The other interesting thing is that like it's screwed up and weird because the top of it was ripped into another dimension. That like there are parts of it that aren't present because they're shunted into an ethereal plane, and the return of the castle turns it back into a normal mountain.
A detail that I just had like completely like not understood up till this second was the fact that like remember that brat that like ruined BJ's life and like was part of Slave Town and like died. I thought like I had. I'd assume she died, what with, like, all of the cords in her brain being, like, pulled out all at once, and that being explicitly told to us that that would kill her. Apparently she's still alive, and not dead, and what Blackjack's next plan is to go, like, get medical treatment for her. So she's on her way to the Zodiacs, and, there's, like, a warning about, like, oh yeah, it's been 3 months, and, things have changed a lot since your, since you were gone and everyone thought you were dead. And like I don't remember the order of events, and I don't even remember who does this, but there's a part in it where they like and sorry audience, it's just this detail edit is just out of my head. There's a bit where they, like, observe BJ's party with Cognitum Jack being there, Cogjack, if you will, and, like, they're all really not enjoying it because, like, she's evil, and, like, so, like, the kind of dumb thing about the scene is, like, she's, like, you know, very, like, ostentatious and manipulative and evil, and, like, she, like, shoots Big Daddy, and we're supposed to care about that instead of clapping like I did. because she, like, shoots him because he's mouthing off, I guess. And, like, it's one of those scenes that's really stupid to me, because it's, like, one of those things where it's, like, well, duh, she's an evil villain, so of course she's gonna, like, talk in an ostentatious way, and she's supposed to be, like, she's regal and on, I have now become the villain. And, like, but, like, the problem is, like,
everybody in Blackjack's life is buying it.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's just dumb. Like, it's there's so much dumb about this, but, like, the one that really bothers me is the idea that, like, a sex robot, like, this is a weird place to come from, but, like, a sex robot that in theory is programmed to be complex enough to be able to, like, fake emotions and like fake, like, personability or like, like hominess or whatever, like to seem like they're a real person, and seductive, that wouldn't have, like, any social skills at all and would just talk like a big evil showdown, like, really bothers me. Like, it's just, it's like, it's such an absurd premise from every direction, but none of it's engaged with at all, and maybe that's why I'm so mad about it, is that, like, so she's, like, she has no ability to be a social chameleon, despite the fact that she's a sex robot, and she's also had, like, 200 years of experience of existing, and, like...
And been connected to the Wi-Fi, like, been connected to a massive network through which she can observe countless people in their interactions. Yeah, in the hands of even marginally competent writer, like, you could make the thing that's the really chilling thing about her is that she's saying and doing awful things, but framed in the way that, like, the ideal the ideal horny secretary would, like a sexy artificial secretary would phrase and frame everything all toward a goal of apocalypse. That would be unsettling. That would be dissonant. But this is lazy. This is, like, she's a supervillain.
She's superhuman, I guess, is the big problem. Like, she doesn't feel like a robot that's evil. She feels like a person that's evil that we're just told is a robot. And even if you just go, like, well, it's because she has Luna's memories. Like, Luna's memories doesn't make her into a sociopath. Like, in theory, she'd be more capable of being able to fake shit because she spent, like, 30 years being on the throne, talking to morons that kiss her ass all day. Like, you don't think, like, any of that would translate into being able to, like, fake being Blackjack? Like, because realistically, like, if this story, like, it was worth a damn, like... The reason why the crew is starting to see through the cracks is because, like, no matter how good she's good at faking Blackjack, there's just eccentricities about the way that she characterizes things that her family would know well enough that it would tip them off. But this just isn't presented this way. They just kind of bite it hook, line, and sinker because they're all idiots. Like, they kind of, like, they have their doubts, but it's more that because they're, like, emotionally and psychologically distressed by this new Blackjack who's killing people. But, like, I actually guess comically, because of the way that this is being read, though, like, the way we read it, this isn't actually different from Blackjack. She's just talking more austerely and not like Blackjack, but she's still killing people and making excuses for it.
Well, that, and they acknowledge, you see, the true power the villain has taken is the capacity for agency. She that's what the cutie mark actually represents.
She has the little character marker over.
Oh my god. I want to see that in a video game now. I want to see, like, the character, like, that's the diegetic thing where the, like, main character marker, the player one marker, moves over to the villain's head. Yeah.
Now I am player one. Oh, but yeah, these scenes are so disjointed, partly because my notes are bad, partly because it's hard to remember what the fuck is happening, and also just because these scenes are so fucking comical and stupid. So, like, she goes to the society because she needs medical help, and here's when we get a bomb dropped. We find out that apparently in the intervening 3 months, Blackjack and her crew has become so popular that people have started dressing up like her and going on heroic escapades, trying to exploit the goodwill of the faction she's helped. So there's a bunch of Blackjack cosplayers running around, pretending to be like Blackjack, because she was just so inspiring of a hero. And because of this, Blackjack can't get on the good graces of the society, or not society, the collegiate. I've been saying the society a bunch, I meant the collegiate, because they think she's just another one of these cosplayers. Because she doesn't have
shit like this. That this is exactly the sort of thing that made me think that the Wasteland is supposed to be teeming with population. That there are tens of thousands of people native to the Wastes. Because if there is only like a couple hundred people at most per settlement, this is the dumbest conceivable thing. Everybody's already met Blackjack. Like, all of the people that, like, all of the factions she's helped, just about every person in one of those given factions has personally seen Blackjack the first time she passed around.
But, like,
so the idea that, like,
there's no indication up to this point that the audience, like, that the factions feel this big, though. Like, this is alarming to hear that, like, there's this much possible doubt. Like, I don't disagree with you. It's just like, it's ridiculous that this is happening, I guess. But, oh, fucking Christ. Because she wants to go see Zodiac for dumb reasons. I don't remember the exact order.
Also, the Collegiate is the most tricky thing to have cameras. They have, like, there's records. They're the only faction that, like, reliably definitely has records. And like, could.
But the problem is that there's two big problems with this. A, everyone knows Blackjack's a robot, including the Collegiate, because they did it to her. And B, she doesn't have her cutie mark anymore either, so she just looks like a cosplayer right now.
She looks suspiciously like a gnoll! She's an adult without a cutie mark. Like, there's, at the very least, they'd take her in to interrogate and maybe dissect her. But fuck it! That would require characterization! That would require, like,
God, this next sentence is about to make my soul die. So, Velvet, Remedy, and Calamity are there for some reason.
God!
they're back in the story for reasons. For all intents and purposes, for the next little while, welcome to our new temporary companions.
No!
There is a unexplained thing at the very end of Fallout Equestria where Calamity loses one of his wings and it's replaced by a cybernetic wing. And he also gets a silver hat because he accessorizes it to the wing, because that's just a thing Calamity does. But because of that, there needed to be an explanation to why that happened.
Oh, God!
That's the way this worked. So he's here to get a cybernetic wing in, like, replacement. They don't believe her at first, because of, like, well, she doesn't really fit the bill. She somehow gets past everyone, and I just don't remember why. I'm just assuming she just teleports a bunch until she just gets to where she needs to go. Because she needs to go to Zodiac. Because at some point, and I don't remember when, she finally fucking figured out that somebody, you know, fucking chapters back, books back at this point, Blackjack had found out that someone was recording through her eyeballs everything she's seeing and doing. And she finally figured out that it was probably Professor Zodiac. So she goes and confronts her head in a fucking jar about this. And Zodiac's like, yeah, I did it. What of it? No, we need to get through this one. Hold your horses. Eh? The thing is that on top of this, Blackjack, at some point, I don't remember how this exactly fucking works, but she had figured out that Silver Stripe, which is Zodiac's real name, was a spy for the zebras, and she always has been. She's what would, like, because she's eventually where Fluttershy gave the bomb tech secrets to, and that's how that got into there. Whatever, that part doesn't matter, but just that her ex, like, there's so much to untangle here, and we don't have time to actually really talk about it, but, like, just kind of how fucked up and how, like, how lazy Sombre is, and that he'll just drop in that, like, oh yeah, this character also got raped. Because, like, apparently, like, Silverstripe, like, had a bunch of racism done to her, and she was sexually, like, and part of that was, like, sexual violence. Like, she was raped by people because of being half zebra. That made her bitter about Equestria, and so she, like, sort of trained secrets to the zebras over it. And, like, we don't have time to unpack that. Because, of course, also, on top of that, she's also been feeding secrets to Cognitum this entire fucking time. Because her plan, and this is another bullshit nonsense, is that no matter who wins, she also gets access to the core, and she, like, so she's another person who plans to subvert Cog's will from underneath her. So this just, this entire time, there's just been this ridiculous thing happening. But, like, it's just one of those things that, like, why does it matter? Like, Cog in theory just could just, like, watch her with fucking just regular-ass cameras and shit. Like, it's not like this twist adds any, like, additional wrinkle into, like, how Cog's been observing BJ this entire time. It's just, it's another way it's been happening.
I hate it. Books ago, I don't. This mystery has been artificially floated. Like, this is. I don't. And everyone has to have had been so artificially stupid to hide this big twist. Man, when this character was introduced, and the second we were told that, like, she's a half breed zebra, like. Biological essentialism, it means that she has dual loyalties.
Yeah. Yes.
God, I hate it, and I want Sombre to hurt. I want to see him physically suffer real bad. Because I'm in pain. it's so bad. God.
Yeah. It's like I said, we don't have time to untangle it, but it's uber bad. We'll have to round back when we do a recap. But BJ fights Zodiac, who apparently has, like, robot body parts now, to fight her, and, like, has a brand new, like, clone body, I guess, from Cog.
I don't want to. Okay, just hurry through it.
Yeah, we don't have time for this. Calamity and Velvet Remedy show up to help fight her because he also has, like, this. He was, like, in another bay getting his wing fixed. I just want to point out something that's really exhausting about reading Calamity's lines in this. So, Calamity canonically has a drawl because he is a cowboy, obviously. But, like, so, like, you know, like, the difference between, like, someone who, like, is from somewhere that has a drawl, like, is from Texas, versus someone trained to fake a Texan accent? That's what this reads like, because the drawl is so fucking aggressive. In every sentence, he's almost, like, intelligible how much accent he's got going on. He's just filled to the brim with accent, and it's like, it's not really a big deal. Stop hurting people, Sombre. Like, this isn't even your toys, and you're breaking them. But there's a ridiculous fucking, like, thing. They beat Zodiac, whatever, she's dead, who cares. BJ gets captured for it, and they interrogate, and they figure out what's going on. It takes, like, 2 hours to do this. Who gives a shit? We have a bunch of conversations between Calamity, Velvet, and Homage, or Homage, depending on who you are, talking to Blackjack about what the fucking plan is. It's like, well, okay, we just stop Cognitum because everything's going bad, and apparently Velvet and, Calamity just have nothing to do now the events of the original story happens, so, like, they're just here now in this story, and there's a whole plan of them, like, going to, like, meet up to go, like, rally a resistance, and then they're gonna go fight Cog, I guess, and beat her, I guess, and BJ starts becoming like obsessively worried about like, something bad happened with Glory and Cog, and she doesn't know what it is, and she said something to her that like damaged her, and she wants to like repair the relationship. So like now she's really obsessed with like getting back to Glory, and there's like this sort of like forced tension where like, okay, the meetup spot is here, and but we found out that like somehow they found out that Glory is going to be going back to like the house that they all live at. So BJ like makes the dumb decision that she's going to go like meet her there because she wants to talk to her personally before they deal with anything else. So she like teleports there and gets there way earlier, you know, just using the fast travel system, obviously. Eats some cereal, I guess, while Glory walks in, and there's like a moment where like it looks like oh, she's gonna recognize her, and then she just freaks out and has a bad moment, and then just starts yelling at Blackjack, and that's how the scene ends, is with Glory yelling at her to get out, because presumably she assumes that she's one of the cosplayers and that like she's making a mockery of her. Really, like, I don't know, it's whatever. It's a reasonable thing to be mad about. Like, you went back to your house and a cosplayer of your tenuous girlfriend, who's turned into an evil monster, just showed up and just eating your cereal. Like, I'd be pretty upset too.
This is a commentary on the fact that all ponies have the same body plan, and you could disguise yourself as any other horse by changing your mane. I guess.
I wish. I don't know.
I can't. I can't remember feeling worse about a chapter.
I'm probably missing a bunch of points that I could be making, but there's a lot of chapters where I just glaze over, and this is one of them. Like, I glaze over a lot of the cosplay stuff because like I can't deal with like gaslighting very well, especially in stories, and like the entirety of the scene is just Blackjack going like, "But I'm Blackjack," and then everyone going, "You're not Blackjack," and it just like fucks with my head. Hard for me to get through that scene.
I mean, it does me physical pain because, like, I've spent like 20 minutes, like, per podcast, yelling like when the like there's a camera in Blackjack's eye like thing came up. Like, I went for a long time, for a long go, losing it over that. Trying to grapple with that dumb plot point, and like here we are again, book five, we finally confront it in any meaningful way, long past its expiration date, and it's every bit as bad as I ever predicted. You know what? Since I predicted that, since I saw that coming, and I'm on the record as having seen that coming, let me try and predict another thing.
Oh, please do.
I suspect that by the time they get to Cogjay, she will already be defeated, and they will have to confront one of the male characters. I forget whether or not
the Legate's still alive. That's about it.
Yeah, no. So the Legate or what's his face? The Steel Rain.
Yeah.
I forget whether or not Steel Rain has been dealt with.
Oh, he bought the farm a while back.
Okay. Yeah, man, good villain you got there. Good villain you got there, Somber. He's left such an impact that his death was really meaningful to me. So yeah, I expect either when they finally get there, she'll already be defeated, or be defeated the second they get on screen by the real villain, who will be a man, most likely the Legate, Golden Blood in a last minute twist, or some new character that we will be assured has been foreshadowed the entire time.
Imagine it was 21. Like this entire time somehow.
You see, that can't do, because that's far too clever. Not even clever. That would be very, very stupid in any context, but it would be too interesting. I would say it would give 21 too much to do. He's long since been locked out of our dear author's considerations. So, yeah, no, she'll be pre-defeated. She will be defanged and more or less, maybe she'll get a conversation before she is
unceremoniously murdered. Yep. Yeah. So yeah, just put the theory in an envelope and mail it to yourself, and then we'll see in a couple of weeks. But otherwise, like that's her fucking chapter. Yeah, the epithet definitely proved true that what the fuck even was this? But do we have anything better we could be consuming?
Let me try and... Wait a minute, what's that? Ding, 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 ding. Jingles?
Jingles, yay!
Hey, Jingle, the listener, when they listen back to this, will probably be hearing a lot of, like, banging and clattering around as though someone was walking out of a... out of a garage, back up into where the Wi-Fi signal was detectable, so that they could open an email. But no, that was actually Jingles ripping his way through the drywall to get here to us, where me and Fire in the same room
down here in the pot bunker.
And now that Jingles has ripped through several walls and some air ducts to get us. Get us the mail. We have it. Thanks, Yay. Jingles.
Thanks, Jingles.
You little jackass. All right. So, here it is. And I will have to, because there's some formatting in here. I'll change the tone of my voice and preface editorial, before I, sort of intersect my own voice into the text. So anyway, here's the text. Good tidings, thou art weird and Fyington. I've been listening to your podcast during my commute, and it's been very entertaining, to say the least. I've been a part of the FOE scene for a bit too long, so this is fairly cathartic, as it probably is to Fy.
Yay.
To exercise the demon that is Project Horizons from their soul. Editorial, the B in Project Horizons is a stylized...
yeah, like Beepus.
It's in a orange box.
So it's like Beepus.
Back to the main text. As we're getting close to the funny number chapter, I will also echo Valentinian's words from before. It's not too late to turn back. It was always too late. Back to the main text. You have yet reached the peak of Somber's filth. If I may know what I'm talking about, and you will soon find out. Of course, I'll save that for the extravaganza! As I have a lot more to discuss on that topic.
Yeah.
Editorial note, extravaganza is formatted specifically in the way that I pronounced it. Back to the
Thank
text.
You.
For now, I'd just like to ask both of you some questions directly. Right. To Fy, mainly. What do you think about the FOE fandom as a whole, especially in light of this podcast and having almost any illusion of PH being salvageable work shattered? Do you think it's worth participating in anymore? Unfortunately, PH is still largely influential, and you can see traces of it built into almost every other sci-fic out there. I'm personally starting to be disillusioned, especially with Bethesda just running the source material into the dirt and then deeper. And I'll take a break from the text of the email to let you answer that question.
So I don't know. I think it's a complicated answer, or it's a complicated thing to answer. But it's like a great question. Like it's genuinely a great question to like ask. Like, is this worth kind of participating in? And the kind of sort of the unfortunate answer is that like the community is pretty not dead, but it's very like zombie-like. Like it really. There's still stuff getting made, which is amazing to me. But like, it's because there's no source material to really spring off of, and you know the original story has been over for years now at this point. Like there is only really relatively a small trickle of stuff that even really comes out anymore. I would say that like for the most part, like the stories are still worth reading if you can find them, but interacting with the people is kind of a crapshoot because a lot of them are very diehard Project Horizon stands, and it's very easy to get very frustrated with them. It's just sort of in general every single time that you interact with them, which has definitely been my experience. But that being said, listeners like you and a bunch of people that I've met, and also people I've like harangued into reading this somehow, are starting to kind of like form this weird backbone of like resistance to the idea that Project Horizons is at all any good. So like, I guess like I'm dragging this community into a better place with my own two hooves, whether it likes it or not. Not to sound conceited, but like, I don't know. So I guess the answer is like, yes, but I would still caution, like, you're going to interact with a lot of jackasses, which is just the general state of fandoms anyways. So, you know, take that as what you will. And just, like, never stop telling people the main character is a rapist, because they really need to remember that plot point, among others.
All right. So what I'm hearing is if you don't like the community, build a better one with blackjack and hookers. Significantly better blackjack. Yes.
A kind of blackjack.
All right. Back to the main text of the email. The question to Weirdington. A bit of an aside, but I'm curious as to what your favorite tabletop RPG is. I can safely cross out a few of the ones you've mentioned on the show, their influence in Sombra's work. Additionally, how terrible a DM do you think Sombra is? I've only heard from the grapevine due to some FOE P&P campaigns. He railroads hardcore editorial. I'd figure. Back to the main text. Unsurprising, if true, but still. I'm also awaiting your rage at Dresden Files with bated breath, because I too hate it. Hey, albeit not as passionately. Well, yay. We'll fix that, editorial. I tend to hate most urban fantasy stuff, so it was a bit doomed from the start for me. All right, so my question. I think my current favorite RPG is Lancer, because yes. it is the synthesis of a dialectic that I've struggled with my entire life, basically. I've always wanted to build an RPG, and so for a while there I was super obsessed with studying it. Like, I got my hands on everything I could read from RPG designers. I've read a whole bunch of mainstream indie RPGs. I used to make a habit of going into every half-price books I'd see to, like, go through the game section and, like, at least skim everything I wasn't familiar with, everything I'd never heard of. I made a habit of systematically looking over other people's, like, the character sheet designs for RPGs to see, like, what sort of ideas I'd never hit upon before. I can say that at one time, if you'd asked 10 years ago, my answer would have been no thought, no doubt, Fate. I would have jumped to say the Fate system, best RPG ever. But something I've discovered over time is that Fate has two critical problems that are sort of fatal problems. One is that it sands down the illusion too far, too close to the bone. And so too many people are turned off because they don't like seeing the naked machinery of a storytelling game. They want to be fooled. They want more crunch to, like, Fate is a little like a magic trick wherein somebody pulls a coin out of your ear and then, like, very, very blandly and without charisma systematically shows you, do not worry, I did not pull the coin from out behind your ear. You see, it was...
Yeah, isn't it mostly improv with dice rolling?
Well, you see, that's the second problem, is that it's too intrusive. is weirdly, it asks you to, like, whenever you want to make a decision, you have to keep consulting a character sheet rather than, like, have just a strong intuitive sense of what your character would do. Like, it's I guess it's helpful as, like, if a player has really never role-played before and doesn't, like, have any sort of theater background, and so, like, has a very hard time knowing, like, what to do next, and, like, it's comforting having a list of, like, things you can do. But it's also, you know, very disruptive because, like, the flow of play in the story is constantly interrupted by this exchange of coins. And so those are the two main problems Fate has. Before I stumbled across Fate and it completely obliterated my brain and utterly restructured the way I think about RPGs, I was very much on a simulationist bent. Like, I would feverishly for hours, like, try to remake GURPS, basically, I guess. Like, to try to like, okay, well, we've got to simulate, like, it's got to be realistic or in some way. It's got to simulate the world in some way. And slowly, while going through that process, I realized that no matter what you do, it's going to require some level of abstraction. And then I came across Fate, which said, yes, it's going to require some level of abstraction, so why not have the maximal level of abstraction?
Yeah.
And then I went through a phase where that I'm still basically in, which is I sneer at generic systems because I think if an RPG is worth writing, it's worth writing about something specific. You're like, when you're trying to write an RPG, you're trying to build a system that tells a certain kind of story that guides the players in the direction of a certain kind of mood and interaction that RPGs, I feel, should be very specific. And along those lines, I have a long rant about how, to me, the most important mechanic in an RPG is the setting. The setting of an RPG is a mechanical consideration. And it frustrates me that too few people, like, seem to understand that, think that it's, no, that's just in the fluff box, and fluff is a completely different animal to mechanics, where I insist that the contours of a setting is one of the most important mechanical considerations in an RPG.
Setting is in the fluff box, which we give to the RP babies, so we don't have to look at them anymore.
And so along those lines, I think, I have more to say about it, but I'm going to try and to wrestle my ADD and stop trying to give you maximum context and just say Lancer, because Lancer, I think, is to my current mind, and maybe I'll change my mind later on the line, Lancer is the ultimate RPG, because what it fundamentally is it's a board game. It's a very fun board game that is extremely modular, and it has a mechanism tacked onto it in the form of the... I forget what Lancer calls them, but the out of mech rolls,
narrative play rolls.
Yeah, the narrative play rolls, which is a streamlined brass tacks just skill system to, like, you know, do whatever in this.
You want to do, like, anything, like, that isn't in a mech? That's not important. So you can just a roll that solves it.
It's very simple, very straightforward, doesn't get in the way, and allows you to put a bunch of descriptive statements on your character
sheet. It's also very flexible, which is an important thing as well.
So currently, Lancer is the best tabletop RPG on the market, because it's just straight up a very fun tactical minis board game. That also features a RP system that doesn't get in the way, doesn't get in its own way.
Yeah, I would also tack onto that, just like Powered by the Apocalypse and its hacks are also quite great as well. If you're just looking for, like,
I haven't played enough of it, and it requires its biggest problem, from what I've seen, is it requires a lot of system mastery on the part of the GM.
Yeah,
Blades in the Dark, very good. It's mm-hmm. very it checks off a lot of the boxes that I've just talked about in this very rant. But
if you're just looking for a toolkit to, like, put into your, like, if you've got like a setting butter that you already want to coat a system in, then PBTA is for you. Like, it's just, it's simple, it's easy.
Yeah, Powered by the Apocalypse has a pretty decent engine and conceit. And the interesting thing about Powered by the Apocalypse is that, like, to its very bones, it can't function without doing the thing that I just said, of being tailored to the specific thing you're trying to do. The specific kind of story you're trying to tell. So anyway, I have answered your question well outside the bounds. the only thing left to say is that me trying to do a review of the Dresden File has been put on delay because the two people I know who could provide me a copy of the first book can't find it. And
who is that letter by as well? Did we get a name?
Dresden Files?
It was the letter that, like...
Oh, we haven't gotten okay. It's signed the postscript.
Okay.
So, hey, we got a question for both of us.
Yeah.
To both, I'm excited to see where the podcast will go after PH is done. A reread of the original would be nice, but branching out would be quite amusing, too. I propose that the direction of the podcast should focus on derivative and incestuous works. so that it can apply to some spin-off or sequel works that have a uniquely fanfic property to them. I can only just now imagine the pain of the two of you digging into the hellscape that was the Star Wars EU.
Oh, God.
Either way, I hope you continue this podcast as long as it's still enjoyable to record it. And let you know that it helps me to get through my long commute to my wage cage. V/R, Slapflack. It is signed Slapflack.
Okay, thank you. So thanks again.
So to that last question, I would like. Do you want to go first?
Yeah, I'll go first. I think my only issue with doing like derivative works of stuff like that is that like it's a great idea, except for a really nagging problem. I don't really care about a lot of things the same way that I care about Project Horizons or care about Fall Equestria. Like I'm one of those people who has like severe special interest problems, like hyper focus issues. So like. It's hard to rationale, but like I deeply, deeply care about Fall Equestria, not only as a fandom, but as a like piece of work. Like it is really important to me, to the point where I show it to people all the time in effort to try and get them to read it. The most consistent way I've gotten people to read it though has been
them listening to
this podcast and me going like, this sucks, but the original is better. And I'm doing it because of that. So the problem is that like there isn't really like a lot of other things I could do except for things that are Fall Equestria derivatives, because it would fill under the same kind of role of fanfic. And there's a bunch of them that I could read. Like there is an interminable number of Fall Equestria fanfics. It's kind of a meme, right? Like there are hundreds of them, like maybe even thousands, because it's very easy to just kind of write within this setting. And for all of the faults that Fall Equestria may have, it's very, like, inspirational. Like, a lot of people's seemingly, like, reaction to reading it is they're filled with brain worms that they just have to make something from it. So much so that the process of us doing this podcast has instilled in both of us, despite this being a derivative work, in both me and Weird. And it's important to remember, Weird doesn't give a shit about any of this.
This is very true.
It's instilled both of us to want to make our own fan content, and I definitely have. Like, I didn't draw ponies and very much like Fall Equestria ponies for years until getting back into this stuff. So like, this is just something I deeply care about, and that's why I wanted to make a podcast talking about it. So the only thing I can really think of outside of doing some like ephemera of just things we don't like is doing more of this. So that means covering stuff like Heroes, Pink Eyes, Guides of Chaos, maybe Murky, but that's kind of too good for this podcast sort of like vibe. You know, there's a ton of stuff we can possibly tangle. Like we're not dry on content if we just do FOE derivatives specifically.
Yeah, so the thing I wanted to say is that in the abstract, I like the idea of continuing to do this podcast where we, like, read through and talk about derivatives, where we talk about where we read and talk about the fanfic of a fanfic. But the big problem with the actual, like, thing of that is that we both have special interest itis, and anything else, we just wouldn't care. the first episode of anything we did wherein, like, it's a fanfic of a Star Trek fanfic, we would end the first episode by me asking Fi if this was all some sort of terrible mistake, and him agreeing, yes, it was, we must stop immediately, I can't. And I would go, yes, I also cannot. And that would be the end of that miniseries. Hell, it would happen halfway through the episode. Like, we wouldn't even finish.
It would just stop. There'd just be 20 minutes of dead air.
So unfortunately, we would have to sort of... Honestly, there's a perverse part of me that it would be almost more amused by the name of our podcast becoming completely baffling and inappropriate and irrelevant by moving on to, like, the thing is, I think this podcast, if it's going to keep going, would have to be about us trading back and forth, talking about fiction that has hurt us, yeah. Art that has caused us pain.
Yeah. Well, that's always the thing too. Is like we've been very back and forth whether or not, like, this is a podcast specifically about talking about bad things, or if it's a podcast that's reviewing FOE stuff. And, like, I'm firmly in the camp that I want it to stay as that, and we just do, like, another series that's on that. Like, I do want to do the, like, Dominic Deegan series, like, deeply. Like, that's, yeah, that is another work that has, yeah, hurt me. But that will be
the thing is, I've never even finished it, so this would be an excuse for me to, like, dig through and finish, like, go to, like, the end Mookie put on that.
But that would be, like, part of the, like, broader fanfic, like, cinematic universe, I guess, and not, like, okay, what we trade over to.
You know what? That's valid. Like, yeah, we can. You know what? We can create a sister podcast, just for art that has hurt us.
Yeah,
and you know what? That's the working title of a project like this.
Art that's hurt us.
The art that hurt the art that hurt me. Show us on the doll where the art hurt you.
But yeah, it's like I said, I love the idea of doing it, but I think the reality of it, we just run out of material really fast, is also a consideration. So it's just something that we have to look at it and, like, okay, what is this podcast even about? And, like, this podcast is about two things, about Fall Equestria, and it's about pain. And, like, eventually we're just going to run out of pain, but we're never going to run out of Fall Equestria. That's never going to happen.
All right, so I think that should be
kind of just everything in general. You can find us at Thou Art Fi and at Weirdington ESQ, right? Is the Twitter handle?
At Weirdington E is the Twitter handle. You can email us at weirdingtonesq@gmail.com. At Weirdington E is my Twitter. Be warned that Fi's Twitter is extremely horny. Yes. On main.
Yes. That's M-A-N-E.
God. This stuff poisons people. We have to stop immediately. This has all been some sort of awful mistake. Terrible.
If it takes them to tear the prices down, down, down. If it takes them to tear the prices down.